Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 16th of October, and I'm recording at 9:50 p.m., and that is Greenwich Mean Time here in sunny London, or at least it was earlier today, albeit a bit chilly. Okay. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just talk about what's happened here in the short term. And by the short term, I'm going to start by the last 3 weeks. Because in my opinion, they have been transformative. Now, if you remember back 3 weeks ago on a Monday 3 weeks ago, well, I was not here in terms of a comment of the day or the audio because I was giving my Markets Now presentation, starting off with all those adages about buy when there's blood in the street, especially if it's your own or even if it's your own. And people were terrified, and it was scary. Big corrections, meltdowns, you know, they are very scary developments. But the psychology, all those bears, and the fright that we heard in comments, and also the fright that we felt ourselves. Well, I'm speaking for myself. Sure, it was frightening. And that's a good contrary indicator. Well, here we are, and another good day in here today. And what I liked to see is that following those upward dynamics that we had yesterday, particularly on Wall Street, but it wasn't just Wall Street, a number of other indices achieved the same. And we ranged around a little bit to Wall Street, even midday, I suppose, a little later than that, went into the red column, but then it closed on the highs. So we've got the Dow up here at 17,216. We've got the S&P 2033. Remember, I said I really wanted to see it hold above that 1950 level. Well, if the sky falls in tomorrow, it could get down there on Monday, and rather it could get there in one day. But the point is, the action's been awfully good, transformative, as I described it earlier on. So solid gains here, and really right across the boards as far as stock markets. There are very few exceptions in here today, although one of them is Sweden in Europe. And if I look in the Asia Pacific region, just down a tiny bit, and we had teensy declines here for South Korea, less than 0.5% decline for Thailand. Elsewhere, I'd say it's pretty well all to the green on the 33 markets that I catch very quickly here on my Bloomberg screen. And looking elsewhere, well, say this, talking about it being transformative, and that's the third time I've used that word, so I'm going to stop there. What are the concerns that remain? And, well, one of them the people will cite is that with technical analysis, following a spike to the downside, that you really have to anticipate the recovery, because if you want confirmation that the market reaction really is over, that it's going to be back up near the highs before you actually feel that you have that confirmation, or you might even hold out for new highs, as some people have been doing. Well, I'll say one thing, we've had an awful lot of shorts cover in here overall, and we are also overbought in the short term, as that you'll not be surprised to hear, after 3 weeks to the upside. But again, we didn't have more than a two-day reaction there last week. So impressive stuff here once again. But if we're looking at, potential problems, those yields are awfully low. People keep talking about deflation and recession, and saying that that'll go on forever as the new normal. And then GDP growth is very slow. That's certainly a concern for me, and I'm not reassured when U.S. companies come out ahead of earnings forecasts, having pitched them low, and they've done it really by via share buybacks or layoffs and a combination of those factors. So, what about this deflation? And I think the best thing we could see in terms of indicating that the global economy was not going to go into a Japan-style deflationary slump, and I'm talking about not Japan in 2015, but Japan a decade ago or 20 years ago. So, watch, as I mentioned yesterday, watch the commodity index. Because one of the reasons we see these inflation figures so low is because that commodities were basically beaten to death, as you know. That certainly helped to slow global GDP growth because those countries that produce commodities, and there are a lot of them, some of them are quite big, Brazil, Indonesia, they didn't have any money. And therefore, they weren't spending in the developed economies or in their neighboring countries. So that was a drag on growth. There are also plenty of long-term benefits from those low commodity prices, but they take longer to be actually realized. I'm thinking about gasoline prices. It's a very, very low. People don't necessarily go out and spend the money they save on gasoline right away, but it does help the global economy overall and not just among consumers. Okay, but watch these commodity indices because I feel, and Owen and I are very much agreed on this, that we've seen the bottom. Looking at that CCI index or the CRY index, that's probably it, the downside. Do we have ironclad confirmation, proof of that, judging from the charts? Excuse me. Well, no, of course not, because they were only hitting those lows in the last 2 or 3 months, and it takes time. All they've been doing is rallying back from extremely oversold positions, overextended positions, and approaching their declining 200-day moving averages. Well, again, looking, it's certainly the moves to the downside certainly looked climactic. To us, and more importantly, that the recoveries that we have seen for a number of commodities are impressive. A lot of short covering is coming in there, and don't forget how many people were short in that sector overall, having forced those markets lower to a certain extent. So, but the point is on inflation, if inflation's going to pick up, it's going to respond first, or you'll see it first, coming from a rebound in the commodity indices. Now, a lot of commodities are up 10 or 20% off their lows. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And if that rally continues and it there's no evidence on the charts currently that it's not going to continue, aside from some overbought readings, which may require some brief consolidations. But the higher commodity prices move over the next couple of months, the more likely it will be that we will see a tick up in inflation data that will catch everybody by surprise. Now, some will say, well, that's good because the global economy is not going into this disinflationary, deflationary slump like Japan all those years earlier. Other people will say, well, wait a minute, here the Fed's going to have to raise interest rates, other central banks are going to have to raise interest rates, and bond yields will be pushing higher. And that would certainly worry people. So it'll be interesting. It'll be choppy, but basically, overall, to close the door here on the short term, we've completed, in my opinion, and I felt this was happening three weeks ago, as you know, but we've completed this a sharpish corrective phase. Now, of course, it was a big bear market for a lot of those commodity indices, but for most of the markets, and Wall Street's the best one to judge what's actually going on here, I'm given its overall influence. But Wall Street, what did you get? A 14% correction on the S&P, I think. Way overdue, hadn't happened in 4 years. Now pushing back up the S&P index and the Dow, S&P 500 and the Dow are just on the underside now of their 200-day moving averages. But NASDAQ, the two NASDAQ indices, CCMP and NDX, have pushed above those levels. The utilities index has also pushed above its MA, and again, these are look like these look like more than just temporary short covering rallies, and I think the mood is spreading, changing in this environment. The more bullish feelings are coming a little bit more to the surface. Okay, so what happens going beyond this? Well, I'll still say I don't want to see that S&P below 1950. That will start to ask a lot of questions if that happens. But we are moving out of this. Well, we're halfway through October, and we can't rule out the possibility that October throws a scary surprise. It certainly hasn't so far, but as I say, we can't rule that out, and people will be a little apprehensive, a little nervous because of that October factor. Now, as we get beyond that, though, get back into, or as we get into November, then we are out of that long May through October period of on average underperformance, which we have certainly seen this year, and we are back into seasonally what is a much more attractive period for markets on average. And this is also occurring as we move towards the election year. And really, the statistics on Wall Street's performance showing that the move from the low of the pre-election year, well, you've got to go back 3 weeks to a month to see most of those lows. Or go back to the August 24th period when we had that meltdown. So you don't have to go back very far to see those lows. But the key point to bear in mind is that the lows of the pre-election year usually lead to a very strong rally as you complete that pre-election year and get into the actual election year. Statistically, that's one of the most attractive periods for stock markets overall. Everybody's forgotten about all that, except, of course, for you and me. And Owen. Now, therefore, I don't see anything to be wringing my hands about. And I think there are a lot of interesting patterns around. You look at so many shares that have had those big pullbacks, and they look like they're in base development phases. And if they get significant rallies back up, such as the NASDAQ indices have seen, then we will we will be reaffirming, or they will be reaffirming, the overall bull market cycle. Okay, if we get a huge commodity market rally over the next 6 to 12 months, that would be late stage of bull market cycle move. But that hasn't happened yet, although it remains a real possibility. And it would be a warning. But right now, we see opportunities. We mainly see opportunities. Now, the point I mentioned also yesterday is, what are people actually going to buy at this time? Are they going to go out and buy Apple, or are they going to go out and buy technology shares? Well, they might. Owen's written about Microsoft here today, which had been a serial underperformer among technology shares, but it's pressing the upper side of a lengthy trading range here right now. And that could produce a bullish surprise. But I think they're going to go more for, on average, people will go for shares that have decent yields, shares that have really been bombed out, because they can get a much bigger percentage gain over the next 5 months, or 5 or 6 months here. And so they'll go to more conservative, take a more conservative investment policy. And that biotech index, as I've been mentioning, that was the last to peak. It had the biggest gain by far to the upside. It's an incredibly exciting sector. I think it's going to go much higher over the next decade or so. But it's lagging here right now, and therefore I wouldn't be moving aggressively into that sector. But if you hold some of those shares and have ridden them out, you've probably seen most of the downside. Okay, then what happens as we go forward? I think, well, I've outlined a pretty attractive overall environment, I think, for equities over the next next 5 to 6 months. And if I'm too optimistic, then it's more likely to be dull than highly bearish. When interest rates push upwards again, that'll make things more choppy, as I've already indicated, but it's a point worth repeating. So let me just dispel one other conventional view, which is, don't touch emerging markets, only go for the developed markets. Well, I think we're probably going to see most of them move to the upside. But again, I mentioned some of these very depressed commodity shares. Well, I've already mentioned them a couple of times. Okay, now let's move on. What about some of these other markets here? What about government bonds? Well, they're telling us at the moment that investors don't expect any inflation to reappear. I've already discussed the best indicator for that. I think going forward, you'll see inflation first in the from the commodity prices. And not everybody will be looking at those, quite obviously. I think that, as I've said so many times in the past, we're in a very lengthy type 3 ranging time and size base formation here for U.S. Treasuries. And I again, we've had this 35-year bull market in terms of falling yields. The total return index is right up near its high, so hats off to all those people who've ridden that bull market, and they've done it without too many stomach-churning incidents, which we cannot say that about stock markets, despite a good bull run that we remain in my opinion. But you know, that's the bonds are the big bubble, and I think it's dangerous. But you can look at the total return index or any of the bond indices, and if you hold bonds, hold lots of bonds, you'll feel, well, what does Fuller know? You know, he's been saying this for ages, like the little boy who called wolf here. What I would say is just look at those charts and say, at this point, I would want to be locking in my profits or reducing losses or whatever. I would walk away. Time to do that is when you're confident, when they're still in form. Don't make that decision under pressure. And again, I think even if commodity indices go up a lot, and I think they will, it's just how long does it actually take? Does it happen very quickly, or does it happen over a period of a year or two? That remains to be seen. It could be quite quick. I would say is that there are powerful, positive, disinflationary, deflationary factors in there, and they're coming from technology. And that's been the case for quite a long time. So, you know, we're not going to go anywhere near those high yields that we were seeing back in the early 1980s for the developed country bond markets. But, you know, even if yields move up, well, 10%, it's gonna, there'll be a lot of blood in the streets in terms of some of these leveraged bond funds. Okay, what about currencies here right now? Dollar index picked up yesterday, couldn't maintain that break below 94, which has been the bottom of the range, and we're back up into the range, 94.73 in here today. On a long-term basis, the U.S. dollar is going to be in a secular bull market, but it doesn't do that overnight, and we're still in what I think will be, and I hope will be, also a very, very lengthy consolidation of gains. Fed trying to keep the dollar down or prevent it from rising too quickly, and they'll do that in concert with the Treasury, as I've mentioned on many occasions in the past. The dollar is the best choice for a big liquid, strong currency over the long term. What do I mean by the long term? I'm talking about the next 2 or 3 decades. Secular move, secular trend move. Now, the euro, it's not going to collapse, I don't think here. So many people have forecast a collapse in the euro over the last few years. But more importantly, I don't think it'll go a whole lot higher in here right now, not with the QE going on and the European Central Bank is going to continue with that QE program. And Europe's got enough headwinds here without seeing a temporary spike upwards in the euro. Sterling could be talked up. I think George Osborne will do everything in his considerable power to prevent it from doing that, because over 50% of our UK exports go into, well, over 50% of our exports go into Europe. So he doesn't want to price them out of the market. Some of those commodity producing country currencies, they fell apart, as you'll know, but they've rallied significantly in the last 3 or 4 weeks. They were overextended to the downside, so they have rallied here, and if commodity markets do as I think they will, then they're going to pick up. They will recover. Not all of them. Governance is everything, as you know. Governance is bad in Russia. Governance is bad in Brazil. But in a good many countries, those weak commodity currencies will strengthen as commodities push higher. Australian dollar would be an example of that, for sure. Canadian dollar is as well. And what about these individual commodities? Well, let's take precious metals. I had said on a number of occasions that, you know, they'd fallen down to really quite interesting levels, and I didn't do anything about it. We've seen some stunning rallies here. One lesson learned the hard way is don't pay up for commodities. In other words, you get a commodity that's had a big move to the upside, it's overextended, a lot of people are talking it higher. It's a dangerous time to go in, or if you do go in on a very small basis, particularly if it's a leveraged position. The next decent corrective phase will be a good indicator of what's going on, and my hunch is that it won't retest the lows. So I think the lows are in, but we can easily retrace a significant portion of the rallies that we've seen off the lows, anything from a third to three quarters of the move, and that's probably a bit of a buying opportunity, although can I make a stronger case for commodities than some of the other things that you'd be interested in? No, I think we're going into a phase here, or we're in a phase where you're spoiled for choice. And decide what interests you the most. And then we have to say, well, why are people going to be buying gold and silver? If confidence improves, might they then weaken, particularly as the dollar is no longer the patsy that it used to be for so many years? And those are arguments for, you know, don't overdo it in precious metals. But so, do precious metals justify, if you're interested, really interested in precious metals, are they candidates for 5% of a portfolio once we see a nice oversold condition here? As profit taking hits the rallies that are currently taking place, yes, I think that would make sense. If those sectors really do interest you, industrial metals flat on their back and production's beginning to come down. That's a good bullish sign overall. Foster production comes down. And again, oversupply is always the key. Supply is the key variable. It can change dramatically relative to consumption. Consumption trundles along, edging up a little bit or edging down a little bit, and it's mostly edging up over the longer term. But supply is vastly more volatile, and I've said this almost every day in audios, but a heck of a lot of commodity production is occurring with the help of good technology, and that's been the problem. And again, if miners follow Glencore's well, back to the wall move and cut production quite sharply. The BHPs and Rios don't need to do that, but let's see what happens. The smart move would be to reduce production or just stockpile it. Don't put it on the market, in other words. And you'll see higher prices. I don't know when OPEC's going to learn that, or maybe they've learned it already, but aren't talking about it here. But again, supply reductions will get commodity prices moving higher. Will we get surging commodity prices? Well, I would be cautious about that. Do we get very good statistical rallies off the lows, percentage rallies off the lows? Sure. Sure. I think we'll very likely to see that over the next couple of years, and it may come sooner than that. All right. I don't want to run on too long, but it's exciting times in here. I hope you're interested in all this, and if you're anywhere near London, come along on our next Markets Now meeting. I love having experienced subscribers and their partners, friends, spouses, so on along at those meetings. Okay, all the very best to all of you.